What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and as you can see from the screen, not only have I figured out technology and understood that I could share my screen on StreamYard, but you can also see my Big Board 1.0. And now I understand most big boards are at least your top 30 or at least 60 players or however many are going to be in the draft, but I've decided on a top 25. I wanted to fit in, a little bit about each prospect and why I put it there. So here's my top 25. I'll expand on this as the weeks go on. But I have my top 25 here. You can read it there. I'm going to go into and expand on it throughout the episode. But we have more to the show as well. I released an article on Bolts Forever giving you one trade up, one trade back for the Wizards. A lot of you guys seem to like the trade back with Brooklyn a lot more than the trade up with Philly, but I kind of want to dive into that and give a little background, give my thoughts on why I think both moves made sense. Not that I would make both moves, but a little background on why they could work. And then also want to, dive into the Kevin O'Connell reporting about the Wizards narrowing it down to three prospects realistically if they were to stay at six. So all that and more, an exciting show for you. And right off the bat, I'm going to get into the big board. What I want to do is kind of go down each player and give a little bit of my thoughts on them and obviously why I have them where they are. Starting with Cooper Flagg, like I don't think you came here for me to tell you that Cooper Flagg is the best player in this draft class. It's, I think, pretty obvious that he is. He's just so NBA ready. Honestly, before he even went to Duke, if you put him into the league, I think he would have found a role on a team at, 17, 18 years old. He's still 18, so very young, very skilled, by far the clear-cut number one prospect. It's one of those can't-miss prospects that you have an easy number one at, like Zion Williamson, for instance, in 2019, I believe. Obviously, Wembanyama, you knew he was going number one. And then you kind of go into last year, and you're like, I don't know who's going to go one. Is it Sarr? Is it Reece Hoshea? It becomes Reece Hoshea. But we're back to the, okay, there's a clear-cut number one. I mean, Cooper Flagg, sensational. The Mavericks got bailed out again. Like, we could talk about the lottery, but if you want to hear my thoughts on how annoyed I was after the draft lottery, you got two episodes ago of the Wizards podcast. It's now up on YouTube. You can listen to that. It's basically 40 minutes of me going in on why the lottery sucks. But nonetheless, Cooper Flagg is the top prospect. I'm not going to be some big brain. I don't know if Cooper Flagg is that guy. He's unreal. He's going to be an all-star type player in the league. He's the number one prospect on my board. And honestly, if a board doesn't have a number one, I don't think I can trust that board from the start. So nothing crazy here. I got Dylan Harper at number two. I've seen the comps to Cade Cunningham. I get it. Bigger guard that can facilitate, get guys good looks, can score for himself. The one downside I will mention about Harper is, as somebody who's from New Jersey, watches Rutgers, like, does he make everyone around him better? Does he make the team better? Is he a winning player? Because, him and where I have Bailey five, but most people have Bailey three, they're on the same team, right? And they didn't even make the tournament. They barely made the Big Ten tournament. They weren't good, like, at all. So do they affect winning? Do they really help the team around them? I don't know. I mean, I don't think Oklahoma State made the tournament with Cade. So, when you're a player like Harper and you don't go to this big name school with all these great players, it's kind of hard to carry a team in college basketball. But that's kind of, I guess, the one negative to his kind of, draft profile. But I think he's a clear cut number two, not in the same stratosphere, I don't think, as Flagg. And that's why I have them separated. But I do think he's way better than some of the other prospects. And that's kind of the tiers that I have. Honestly, I could put a tier under about 9 or 10 in this, but I decided to just kind of separate those two and then kind of clump everybody else together and kind of give you my reasoning on why I have them where I have them. Number three for me is Edgecombe. I understand Ace Bailey's kind of more so consensus three, but it's realistically Edgecombe versus Ace Bailey 3-4. I went with Edgecombe because I like his motor. I like his defense. He's a freak athlete. Like, you saw a lot of these tools throughout the season. Like, if you watched him in game one versus their tournament game that they lost, I believe they made it to the second round. They, his growth was pretty noticeable. The shooting has to get better. He needs to develop more of an offensive game. That's understandable. But the defensive upside, the athleticism, the size, I just like that kind of package. And let's say the Wizards trade up to number three, I would take Edgecombe over Ace Bailey. Like, I don't know if his ceiling as a scorer or offensively is as high as Ace, but I think his defensive ceiling is way, way higher than Ace's. His two-way potential, like I really like him. He's had comps to Oladipo, and I think that's a good comp. You know, Victor was always a solid perimeter defender, on-ball defender, and that offense started to come around when he really hit his stride late. You know, when he was in OKC and then in Indiana as well, when he was an All-Star. So that's why Edgecombe kind of, you know, edges Ace there. But I also don't even have Ace in the four slot. I have Trey Johnson, because I think when you're looking at Johnson and Bailey, it's two guys that can score the basketball. You know, you're not drafting Trey Johnson anywhere close to for his defense. And same with Ace Bailey. Like, Bailey may be more versatile. He's lankier, better size to defend multiple positions, offers more versatility maybe on that end. But look, at the same time, Trey Johnson was a better scorer in college. I think he has the tools to be a phenomenal 20, 25 plus points per game per season scorer in the league easily. It depends. Like, he could become one of those like Cam Thomas type players in Brooklyn where he's going to get 25 a game and he doesn't affect winning at all. That I could see that, right? I mean, you've seen DeMar DeRozan, phenomenal scorer, but anywhere he goes realistically, they're a playing team. And so you have guys that can get theirs and don't affect winning, and then guys that can get theirs and they affect winning. I don't know which way Johnson's going to go, but I certainly view him as a better scorer than Ace Bailey when I'm looking at the two. I don't think his ceiling is nearly as high maybe as Bailey as an overall player, but I think he edges him out there for me in terms of overall production in college. Obviously, his team was a lot better than Rutgers and Texas as well. But at the same time, I just think that if I'm looking for a score, I'm taking Trey Johnson over Ace Bailey. And that could be controversial, but again, it's my big board and I understand. And I'll say this as well, like the comment section on my last video with Damo, it was awesome. You guys really enjoyed that episode. You really enjoyed Damo. You really wanted me to have him on again, so I definitely will. But that was a great comment section, right? I don't expect the same thing for this. I understand people get really intense about their big board and their prospects. Again, if you think that my big board is great, let me know. That'd be great. We can talk about it. If you think my big board sucks, please let me know. We can talk about it. I understand that not all the comments about my big board are going to be nice, and that's okay. But we can have some respectful dialogue, of course, in the comments below. But again, I think if I'm looking for a score, I'm taking Johnson. And then obviously I have Bailey there at five. Ceiling is through the roof, but I think he also could be a bust. You know, I think he has major offensive upside, right? You've seen the unbelievable shot making at Rutgers. But the issue is he's taking bad shots, right? And he says there's no bad shot for Ace Bailey, and he can shoot pretty much over any defender they throw at him in college. But there's more length, there's more size, there's way better defenders in the NBA. And I just feel like even against college players, it was kind of tough for him to get to his spots, to facilitate, get to the rim. And that's why he had to take tough shots. And he made them, right? He made the tough shots. Credit to him. He's a tough shot maker. But that kind of skewed my thoughts on him a little bit. The inability to really create too much space against some of the lesser college defenders. And when he gets to the NBA, I don't know how that's going to translate. Like I mentioned, poor shot selection for Ace Bailey, inefficient at times. Like, he'd go 9 of 9 in games, and then he'd go like 3 of 17. And it's not like he's playing SEC level competition. This was against some non-conference opponents, obviously against Big Ten opponents as well. So again, like, I think if you're looking for a home run prospect that could pan out but could also bust out, then maybe Ace Bailey is your guy. Again, if he falls to 6, like, the Wizards should take him in a heartbeat. If it's, you know, Jeremiah Fears or Konka Nipple kind of go in that top 6 and you're sat there as the Wizards and you can take Ace Bailey at 6, like, that is the prospect I think you go for if he falls into your lap. But again, if I'm trading up and I'm the Wizards, I'm not doing it for Ace Bailey. That's why I have him at 5. Number 6, Konka Nipple, and I mentioned this in my pod with Damo as well, right? Like, would I take Konka Nipple at 6 if I'm the Wizards? No. I think that they're looking for a star, a difference maker, and I don't know if Khan will ever be that in the league. I think he's a tremendous complementary piece. Like Damo mentioned, you know, you throw him on a contending team like Philadelphia, I think he's a rookie of the year contender easily. He's NBA ready, one of the best, if not the best shooter in this draft. Very polished prospect, right? And he's not just a shooter. He can create for his own. If you actually watch the games, if you watch Duke, if it wasn't Flag, it was Khan. He was creating for himself, creating for others. He's phenomenal, and that's why I have him 6th on my board. And even as a best player available, it hurts me to say this, but if he's my best player available there at 6 and the top 5 go like I think they will, I'd probably still take someone like Fears or Queen over Khan. It goes against my draft philosophy, but again, I don't think that he's the piece the Wizards need I still think he's a top six prospect, and that's why I have him there at number six. Really like his game, his shooting mechanics. Think he's going to be a phenomenal player. Moving on to seven, I have Jeremiah Fears out of Oklahoma. The Wizards clearly in the market for a lead guard. I understand they have Poole, but he's older than most of the players on their roster. He's on a big contract for the next 2 years. I don't know if they view him as part of their future. And even if they do, you know, you want to draft a younger lead guard, right? I think Jeremiah Fears makes sense, and I understand there's question marks about his turnover rate, his shot selection, his you know, percentage of you know, finishing around the rim. I get it, but he's athletic, he's shifty, he's still only 18 years old. He could be a lead guard for you. Obviously, you're going to have lead guards in college turn the ball over. It's, you know, you don't have your Ben Simmons at LSU who's just dominant. You know, you have struggles, right? And Jeremiah Fears needs to get a lot stronger too. That's what happens a lot of times in college. I've seen comps to Dejounte Murray is the one I've seen the most, and he's had a pretty solid NBA career, made a lot of money. Hawks shouldn't have traded for him, but that's another debate. I just think if I'm the Wizards and top five goes like it does on my board in any order, I'm taking Fears, and I know a lot of people like Derek Queen. A lot of people would say draft Connie's the best player available. A lot of people would say go for Malawak. You can't teach size. I understand those arguments. But for me, I think Fears trumps Khan in terms of I think Khan slightly edges him in terms of best player available, but I just like Fears' overall game. I like the fit that he has in terms of a really need that the Wizards have. And I would take him there if the board falls the way it does. And then I got Derek Queen there at eight. And it's crazy because I saw him in Yahoo's mock draft the other day. They had the Wizards getting him at 18. You know, I've seen him in that 8 to 13 range for most reporting. I think that's what ESPN might have reported as well. That's kind of where you see him. So I'm at the very front of that range. Again, if the Wizards are at six, I wouldn't necessarily take him over Fears, who I think will be there, or Johnson, who will be there. That would be my pick. But I would understand it, right? I can get behind someone like him that fits well next to a 7-foot shooter like Alex Sarr. Queen's more of a bruiser down low, can be an offensive hub where you park him at the block, or you park him at the elbow, and you kind of, you know, have him facilitate the offense, find cutters, screen for others, roll. Like he could be that offensive hub, right? That's kind of what you see with Jokic. And I'm not comparing him to Jokic at all, but he's a bigger forward that's tremendously gifted offensively. The hops are an issue. The defense isn't the greatest, but again, he's not a liability. I don't know why people consider him this defensive liability. He's not laterally quick. He's not the greatest defender, but he blocks shots. He walls up defenders. He doesn't get bullied down low. He grabs boards. Like, he can more than hold his own on that end. So again, I don't think he's the liability people think. That's kind of why maybe some people have dropped him because of the defense to maybe outside the lottery, which I think is crazy. But I think the combination of size at 6'9", 250, the ability, he was a little bigger coming into the season. He kind of slimmed down a little bit. That's what I've heard from the articles I read. He just has so much skill for a player of his size. And I think, like Damo mentioned, him being that offensive hub is something that I could get behind. I wouldn't take him personally at six if Fears or Johnson are there like I expect. But at the same time, I could get behind it. It doesn't seem like, based on reporting, the Wizards are too interested in a guy like Queen, at least at six, right? And we'll get more into that later. But for me, I think that the combination of size and offensive skill kind of put him up at eight for me. I have Khamah Malawak at nine. Again, the size is just, like people say, unteachable. 7'6¾" wingspan. I mean, are you kidding? Like, that's just unheard of at 7'2". He's shooting better in workouts. That's what reports indicate. He was 12 of 25, I think, from three at the combine. But I will say he made only four threes at Duke the whole season. Like, this could be a new thing that he's been adding, you know, during the pre-draft process and the offseason. I understand that. But again, I like to see it in game speed, and him making them uncontested in workouts isn't something that's going to propel him to the sixth spot for me at all. You know what I mean? So again, you can't teach size. I think maybe it could work with him and Sarr, but there's spacing issues. There's defensive versatility issues where you can ask, you know, Alex Sarr and Malawak to play together. I think if I'm an opponent, I'm just playing small ball, and I'm going to make Alex Sarr guard a 6'5", 6'6" wing and see how that goes. You know, you see with Rudy Gobert all the time in the playoffs where they put a small there and it's pretty difficult. Imagine you have two Rudy Gobert type players, 7 foot, maybe not the most quick of foot. I don't know if that works, and I understand you're drafting best player available and not fit, but I mean, Alex Saar is going to be on your team ideally, right, for the foreseeable future. So what does that mean? You're going to just have to not play these two together when you, if you make the playoffs, what are you going to do? It doesn't make sense to me to pick him at six. Now, if there's a astronomical fall and he's there at like 15, trade up, get him. Sure. But at the same time, that's why he's 9 for me. I think there's just better players available at 6, and that's why I have him at 9. Can't teach size, great rim protector as well. If he adds a 3-pointer, then he's going to be great, but I have him at 9 there, slightly behind Queen. Yegor Demon there at 10. This is a high riser. It's very possible that he goes 5. I think this is, he's from BYU to the Utah Jazz at 5. It makes sense, right? The Jazz have so many guards. Do they really want to go another scoring guard again in Johnson or Fears? Maybe not. Maybe they go Demon. To me, like 6'9" playmaker, could be a point guard, definitely a ball handler, offensive creator. The shot looked really bad at times, but then there were times where it looked okay. I've heard he's been shooting the lights out in pre-draft workouts. So I understand that the hype is real. I don't know if he'll necessarily be there around this range. I think he's pretty much a lottery lock for sure at this point. And look, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes 15, 16 or whatever, but I think he's a lottery lock. He could go as high as 5, I've heard, to Utah. So just that combination of size, offensive ability, playmaking, all that considered, I really like him as a prospect, and he'll probably continue to rise based on what we hear from pre-draft workouts. But I'm a big fan of Demon and his game, and I understand what Utah would see if they took him at 5. And now moving on, that's my top 10, right? This is kind of where I think I skew definitely from consensus. But I have Drake Powell at 11. This is a guy that was, preseason lottery pick. Up and down throughout most of the season, I understand that. The offense won't jump off the charts. But if you look at Drake Powell, if you look at his frame, like this is a guy that can defend easily 1-4 in the association, possibly even some 5s. Just special skills on defense, right? And that combined with 48% from the field, 38% shooting from 3, those are pretty solid splits for a guy that's considered to not be the greatest offensive player. I've heard in the combine, he shot really well in workouts. He's been doing really well. The shot's a work in progress. Like, it's not where it like possibly could be. But if your shot's considered a work in progress, you're still nearly 40% from 3 as a potential 3-and-D guy. That's kind of what I like. And the league's kind of shifting towards this, right? You don't have your specialists anymore. People like Corey Kispert that can shoot the ball really well and cut really well, but as much as they try to get better, aren't going to be really a great defender, and they're still going to be hunted on defense. The league's going away from that. They want guys that can play both ways. So I think in the past, Drake Powell wouldn't be considered, even in top 20. But for me, it's the combination of this guy can play defense at an elite level. I've seen that in college, defending 1-4, defensive versatility, checks all those boxes, right? And the athleticism is off the charts for a guy like Drake Powell, who, let me pull up the number, best standing vertical and best max vertical at the NBA Combine. That's amongst all prospects that had tested at Chicago's Combine about 2 weeks ago. And he was top 10 in all 5 athletic tests at the Combine. He's just an insane athlete, terrific perimeter defender, on-ball defender, can make the 3. Like, in a league that's really looking for these 3-and-D guys, I mean, Mikal Bridges, right? 3-and-D guy for most of his career with Phoenix, goes to Brooklyn as 1A, and you can see the scoring go off. But 4 first-round picks, I believe, the Knicks traded for him, because teams that are contending know how important these 3-and-D type players are, that you can just stick on the opponent's best player, call it a day, and they can make the 3. That's kind of why I have Drake Powell so high. It's why I have Carter Bryant right behind him. These are guys in college that average pretty similar numbers. I think Powell was about 7.5 points. Bryant was about 6.5 points per game. So you look at that and you'd say, well, why am I taking someone that didn't even average 8 points per game in college in the lottery? But again, sample size is important. Film is important. And when you watch these guys play, when you watch them defend, when you watch them shoot the ball, I just see an NBA player in them. I see a contributor for years to come in them, someone that I would trade a couple first-round picks if I'm a contender for, because I need guys like that on my roster. And now the Wizards have Bilal, right, that they think they can easily stick on the opponent's best player. They have Keyshawn George too. But what if you had someone else? What if Greg Powell was there again? This is a guy I think that will be there at 18, right? And just because he's 11 on my board doesn't mean he can't be there at 18. I think he'll definitely be there at 18. But at the same time, this is a guy that I covet. This is a guy that I think is going to be a really phenomenal NBA player. And when the Wizards not necessarily star hunting after they probably star hunt their first pick, I think this is a very safe pick. I think this is a guy that's going to have a solid NBA career. And it's somebody that I would draft that high. I could get into Carter Bryant too, but it's pretty much the same argument for both. Like, tested very well, 3-and-D type players that I expect to be really good in the league. Low usage in college, but I'm buying their upside. All that considered, that's why I have them 11, 12 on my board. I'm probably going to get the most tape for these two. Maybe not Bryant being so high, but definitely Powell being so high. But again, it's my board. I really like Drake Powell. I've watched a lot of UNC this year and the last week of just watching film on these players. So big fan of Powell. I got him at 11 on my board. Bryant at 12, pretty much the same reasoning. Powell edges him out slightly because I like the physicality. I like the strength and that more a little bit more of the defense that Powell brings. But I could interchange with either. I think they're very good players, and I think they're going to be great players in the league. Moving on, I have Noah Sanja at 13. Again, this is a guy that I've seen as high as six on boards. I think Yahoo just had him at 8. He was, I think, one of, if not their highest risers, and he's flying up boards. I'm not high enough on him to give him a top 8 grade, but I understand the upside. This is an upside pick, and that's my only note here is upside. Like, I think the defensive versatility is what a lot of people are looking at for a guy like him. What I'm looking at is, can he create for others? Is that shot going to be consistent enough in the league, or is he just another lanky French forward that's 18, 19 years old, and people think that Will Dawkins is just going to go for him again because of all of those things? Again, At six, I would honestly be a little disappointed. Like, I don't think that he is the sixth best player at all in this draft. I think there's, as you can see in my board, a lot of prospects that are clearly better than him. But at the same time, this is an upside pick. Can he develop into something? We'll see. But I could get behind it if he's still there at like 15, the Wizards trade up. If he's there at 18, I think I definitely could get behind the pick. But at six, it's a little bit too rich for me. But great upside there. Moving forward, I'm going to try to speed this along as well. Cedric Howard, he's been a high riser as well out of, just not out of nowhere, right? But he kind of took an unconventional route, transferred a couple times in college, and has just gotten better at every single stop. Stretch big that could, knock down the three, major improvement every year in college, has the size and defensive versatility to where if he gets switched onto a smaller player, I think he can hold his own. I really like what he brings. So I have him at 14 on my board. Thomas Sorber at 15. This is a guy that Wizards fans, I think, really would like at 18. Someone that can bruise down low, right? He showed an ability to make the three. I don't think he's going to be the stretch five that everyone maybe envisions, but he's a bruiser too. There was a game against Georgetown where I believe he had 25 and 12 on the, or sorry, a game at Providence for Georgetown, where he had 25 and 12 on the road, was the only reason Georgetown was really alive and kept that game close. Providence had no answer for him, right? And not that Providence was this powerhouse team, but he was dominant. And that he was dominant throughout, throughout conference play and throughout non-conference play. And it's just a guy that I think would complement Alex Saar quite well. Someone that could knock down the three, but can also, take on the assignments of bruising type forwards and centers where Saar kind of gets bullied sometimes. He's more so of your rim protector. I think I'd actually like that combination of, if you want to go big, right, have Saar and Sorber kind of take that 4 or 5 of your front court. And I think you have a pretty good complementary duo there. So again, if Sorber's there at 18, I would really like to take a shot at him for if I'm the Wizards. I think he's a phenomenal prospect. And this is kind of your forwards range, right? The guard that I have here is Nolan Treyer. And again, like Powell, this is a guy I'm way higher on than consensus. I think, as you can see from my board, like, defense is really important to me when I'm evaluating these prospects. The motor, the size in order to, defend multiple positions as a guard. Just the defensive talent as well is something that I've liked, from Treyer in all the games that I've watched. Good on-ball defender. I think if I put him on the opponent's lead guard, that he can make it really difficult for him. I mean, you've seen the importance of someone like that in the Indiana series, right? Like, I think Jalen Brunson's the best player in that series. But again, Aaron Nesmith has not taken him away, but, you know, in game four, he's 3-13 with Nesmith on him, and then he's 6-7 with Ben Shepherd on him. Like, these lead guard defenders, these perimeter defenders are so important in today's game. OKC just got Alex Caruso, and he's completely changed the way that they play. They are important, right? And I think this is a guy that could be just that. He's not going to be the offensive creator that maybe you would want in one of your lead guards, but he doesn't have to be a lead guard. I think it'd be a complimentary guard. And the 3-point shot is something that dipped, and I understand, like, the offense and the season overall for Trey Ayer wasn't what people expected. People had him top 5, top 4 in this draft in the preseason. He's clearly not there anymore. Still definitely a first on most boards. But again, he's shooting 43% from 3 over his last 10 games. Like, he's improving, and he's not a terrific 3-point shooter. He could be, though. And that's what I've liked from those last 10 games, is that uptick in percentage from 3. But the defense is what I'm buying here. I think the offense can develop. You saw that with the 3-point shot being better the last 10 games. But this is someone that I'm buying on. And if he's there at 18, honestly, he's my pick, unless a guy like Demon falls. And I think the other guys that I have on the board will probably not be there either, based on what I've been reading. But Trey Ayer is just kind of like my prospect, I guess, in this draft. I'd say Drake Powell is too, but I feel like in drafts, you have your 2 to 3 guys that you're way higher on consensus. Powell's one for me, and Trey Ayer certainly is as well. I'm pretty high on him. So more so buying that defense from Trey Ayer, but he's number 16 on my board. Rashear Fleming, I mean, unbelievable length for a forward there. Has shown an ability to stretch the floor as well with the shooting touch. He averaged 14-8 on 53% from the field, 39% from 3 on 4.5 attempts per game. Like, that's a really great sample size. Someone that has clearly shown an ability to be a stretch 4 in college, and I think could translate to the NBA with that length on the perimeter. I really do like what Fleming offers. I think he'd be, you know, a nice piece to throw in at the 4. If you play Sar at the 5, he could be a nice piece off the bench. I'm not sure where you want to put him, but I am buying his potential stretch 4 ability. The sample size, the nearly 40% from 3 on that sample size, I'm pretty high on Fleming. I've seen him as high as 13 on boards. I know Damo's pretty high on him too, but that's kind of where I'm at with Fleming. Neat Clifford there at 18. I think the reason people, especially Wizards fans, aren't as high is the fact that he's 23. I understand that, but you can't just keep drafting 18, 19-year-olds. Like, if he's the best player there, then go for it. His combo of size and scoring, his ability to just effortlessly get to his spots. I mean, I know a lot of people watching this are probably from the DMV. If you went to Maryland or are a Maryland fan, or you just watched that tournament game where Queen hit the buzzer beater, like, Nick Clifford pretty much dominated. Like, he was in his spot whenever he wanted, scoring at the basket from 3, mid range. He got it. He's got it all in his game, right? And you expect that from a 23-year-old, to be more polished a little bit on offense than others. But I think he's going to be a solid NBA player. You know, really high floor. Don't know what his ceiling is, but I buy the scoring prowess. I buy the polished, offensive game. And that's somebody that if they took him at 18, I wouldn't mind it. You know, I think he's got what it takes to be a good player. Coming in at 19 is Danny Wolfe. This is a guy that's another skilled passer for a 7-footer. I mean, you get it to him in the post, and I trust that he'll make the right decision pretty much 9 out of 10 times. And not a Jokic offense. Like, I hate comparing guys to Jokic because he's one of one, but he's a really skilled player for someone of his size. And is he athletic enough to stick with some of the speedier guys in the league? I'm not sure. But he's a very smart player, very skilled offensive player. And again, I don't know if he necessarily should be the pick for the Wizards at 18, but I do buy his skill set as a passing big and someone that I could get the ball to in the low post and trust that he'll make the right decision for my offense. So moving on to 20, I have Noah Penda here. This is someone I'm a little bit new to, didn't watch too much of his game before the last like 2-3 weeks. 6'8", 220, it's pretty good size, versatile defender, can defend multiple positions, very strong. It's just the offense. Will it develop to where you want it to be? And that's maybe the question mark for a lot of these prospects. It certainly is for a guy like Trey Ayer, who I'm pretty high on. Same for guys like Drake Powell, Carter Bryant, and that kind of thing too. But I do like what I've seen from Penda on film and in scouting reports I've read. And he's kind of number 20 for me. I've seen lottery grades on him. I don't mind that. But that's why he slots in there. And that's my top 20. The next five, Ace Anua out of Georgia. He was seemingly lottery for most of the year. I mean, I know my first big board way back in like January, I think I had him six, maybe. I was, you know, and he kind of trailed off as the season went along, but bruising forward, right? High floor as a rim runner. I could see him as a pick and roll type player. But again, that outside shot isn't necessarily what some NBA evaluators would want it to be. Can he create his own offense, especially from the low post? And that's kind of what you're looking at for a player like Newell. And that's kind of why I think he's dropped. That's why I have him at 21 on my board. I think phenomenal value for the Wizards if they want to trade back in and get him, if he's still there in the mid-20s. But I could definitely see him falling outside the top 20 for sure. Yakushionis there at 22. This is a guy that I'm quite low on. We mentioned this on the last pod as well. I'm lower than consensus, right? He's kind of a lottery shoo-in for a lot of evaluators, and I don't necessarily buy that. You know, he's a very skilled guard. I get that, but I think his major flaws were exposed in Big Ten play. As someone who attends Penn State and watches a lot of Big Ten basketball, this is a guy that kind of dominated the non-conference schedule and then trailed off big time when conference play came around. You know, poor turnovers and decisions with the ball, 3.7 turnovers per game as a lead guard. That's not kind of what I'm looking for. Shot just 32%, under 32% actually from three. These are just traits that I'm not high on. And if I'm looking for a lead guard, someone that turns the ball over a lot and can't necessarily shoot three that well and trailed off against better competition, that's not who I'm looking for. I think at 18, it would be good value, but again, as you can see from my board, I think there'll be better prospects available. I'm just not as high on him as most. Ben Saroff at 23. This is more of an upside pick. I think he's got a good combo of size and playmaking ability at 6'6". He's still 19 years old. I've seen people compare him to Denny. I think just because they're both Israeli. I think it's kind of a lazy comp. But again, it's more of an upside pick. Assange is more of an upside pick. There's a lot of upside guys here, and Dawkins has shown a liking to them. Bilal was an upside pick for sure. And so I have a 23. I could see the case for somebody saying you shouldn't even be a first round pick. But that would be more of an upside pick for me. Reynaud at number 24. The reason he's not higher is his rim protection was pretty bad for someone of his size and length at 7'1". But I do buy the offensive game. I mean, if you watched him in some of those games for Stanford, like 20 points per game on nearly 50% from the field, 7'1", that's kind of, you know, unteachable. And I really like the ability to stretch the floor and be an offensive creator for pretty much himself and maybe for others as well. But the rim protection is kind of why I have him a little bit lower than maybe most would. But he's definitely a high riser on draft boards. Has, I'm sure, had good workouts offensively. And then possibly the biggest surprise for most people looking at this is CMB, Colin Murray-Boyles, there at 25. Again, I've seen some boards with him as high as three, which I think is astronomically ridiculous. I think he's a small ball five at best if you think he's a center, and maybe realistically a bruising four. I'm way lower than consensus. I don't – in a league that likes length and size and defensive versatility – he just kind of seems like, you know, maybe he can develop into someone that locks down your three or four on another team, and maybe offers a little bit on offense. But I don't buy the jump shot. I don't buy the offensive game necessarily translating into the league. I mean, he's getting comps to Draymond Green. Like, I'm not giving Draymond Green. There's a reason Draymond was drafted so late when he came out of college. Like, it's rare for players of his size, his build, to really excel in the league. And Draymond had to work hard and really carve out this niche of being the best defender a lot of years and one of the best defenders always in the league, all defensive player. But he was never an offensive guy, right? His defense can sometimes knock down a couple threes for you. Sets good screens. And if I'm the Wizards, that's not the type of prospect I'm looking for. If I'm most teams, that's not the type of prospect that I'm looking for, because 9 times out of 10, I don't think these types of guys and these types of builds pan out. So again, I get the consensus being a little higher than on him. I understand that I'm quite low on him, but I just don't buy the translation of his college game going into the pros against bigger, lankier forwards, centers, whatever you name it. So That's why I'm at 25. It's going to round out my board. And there's definitely more prospects, and I'll start to add to it as the draft gets closer, as we look more into that second round. If the Wiz do keep 40, who are some prospects to look for in that range? But moving on, I want to touch on my article real quick from Bullets Forever from the other day. I offered two trades for the Wizards to consider, right? Not trades necessarily that I would make. I wouldn't make the first trade to Philly because I'm not as high on Bailey, and I don't think Edgecombe is worth taking on PG's contract. But I would make the Nets trade, and I think more of the feedback that was kind was about the Nets trade. More of the feedback that was unkind was about the Sixers trade, right? But I can talk about the Nets trade because that one was Washington getting number 8 and number 26 in this draft, and Brooklyn moving up two spots to number 6 and taking Fears. As you've seen in pre-draft workouts, Brooklyn already had one with Fears. They had a meeting with Fears. They, from all reports, are tremendously high on Jeremiah Fears, way higher, I think, than most. And so I think maybe they think New Orleans could come in there and snag him, knowing that Deontay Murray might not be back early, at least in this season, because he did tear his Achilles last year. But maybe they think Washington or another team could jump them and take Fears, and they want to just guarantee it. I mean, this is a Brooklyn team that has 4 picks in the first round. I've seen people say that Washington could get 19 instead of 26 in this trade. That, if I'm Brooklyn, is a little too rich for me, right? Like, again, you know, Washington, if Washington doesn't want, you know, Fears at 6, and they know that Fears are going to be taken there by Brooklyn, it's an easy trade back for them, right? Like, you can take Fears, and then if we have multiple players, like, let's say Washington says, we don't necessarily aren't as high on Fears, but we like Queen or we like Demon in this range, and that means that one of the two will be there at 8, and we're fine doing that if we can take back 26. I get that, right? But if I'm Washington, like, I don't think 26 is enough for me to say I'm going to take either of those two. If I'm Washington, I'm sitting there saying, I'm just going to take my guy now. You're not giving me enough. And then maybe Brooklyn says, okay, we'll bite the bullet. Here's 6 and 19. I want to move up 2 spots to guarantee we get Fears. But that would be only if I think there's another team definitely lurking, or if New Orleans will definitely take him at 7. Because all these teams, right, they have intel. They know exactly what's going to happen. If you look at 2023, right, the Wizards could have sat there at 8 and maybe, obviously, clearly, you know, Indiana didn't want Bilal Coulibaly or wasn't going to take him. But the Wizards had to jump up one spot, give up 2 second-round picks, because the reports indicated that the Utah Jazz had another offer to move up to take Coulibaly if the Wizards didn't. So I could see if that's the case, then maybe Brooklyn's like, okay, we have to do what we don't want to do and give up 19. But I think 6 and 20 or 8 and 26 for 6 is a fair deal. I think Brooklyn. Sorry about that. Looks my mic muted. Brooklyn clearly in the market for a guy like Fears, and I think that's a move that could definitely be made there. I think most preferred this move, over the trade up. There's less risk. You're not taking on any bad contracts. It's only a slight move back, and you still take the player you want. I think that's kind of what a lot of the move back camp has been preaching. So I think this would be the best move for that to happen. I think it could definitely happen on draft night. The Philly trade is a little bit different, right? If you didn't read the article, and if you didn't go to Bullets Forever, there's way more explanation there. It's a great article, unbiasedly. On the person that wrote it's great. It was me. Philly gets number 6, a 2026 first-round pick, the worst of Houston, LAC, and OKC. It's the same one from the Jared Butler deal that the Wizards got, so they're sending it back. Sadiq Bey, Marcus Smart, and Chris Middleton. And the Wizards get the 3rd pick and Paul George. Look, I mentioned in the move, and a lot of people just can't read or disregard this. It's all the title of the trade is if and only if the Wizards think Ace Bailey could be a star. You're not making this move at all. You're not taking on one of the worst contracts in the league if you don't think Bailey or Edgecombe is your guy, right? Not at all. So certainly that's the reason, right? PG, 3 years, 161 left on his deal, 50 pretty much per year. That's disgusting. And I mentioned, like, if you swapped him out with Beal and took away preconceived notions, or if you just said, I'm taking this guy with this contract, didn't attach the name, you'd have been like, oh, I'm not taking on Bradley Beal. That's ridiculous. You have to pay me to take him on. But I think Philly fans have this like bloated image of PG before he played a game for the Sixers where he was very good on both ends in that last year with the Clippers, and he was a winning player. And then you look at him the last year, and he was worse in every pretty much statistical category than Beal, played 12 less games than Beal, But yet Beal is this awful, worst contract to player in the league. And then you look at Paul George, and I think his contract is possibly worse. He's also 4 years older. So if you swapped Beal and PG in this move, I think Wizards fans would say, oh, you have to give me way more. And I think Sixers fans would say, no, this is perfect. Take the trade. So that's kind of why I think it could work. But I just talking to both sides about this deal, Sixers fans sometimes don't think that they're getting enough because they inflate Paul George's value. Wizards fans don't think they're getting enough because I think they're more realistic about George and saying he isn't good. But they're also saying, we don't think Bailey's that good. We're not making the move either. So I don't think Wizards fans were necessarily upset about the package. Because if this were a package for Dylan Harper, they would have done it easily. But I don't think Wizards fans are as high as consensus on Bailey. And I think that's why they were a little down on this move. Completely understandable. I wouldn't make the move either. I know Damo would make the move because, I mean, well, he wouldn't take back Paul George's contract, he said, but he's very high on Ace Bailey. Me personally, most Wizards fans, they're not. So I think that's why people were a little out on it. And then moving on to kind of the last thing I want to mention in this episode, it's Kevin O'Connell of Yahoo, his reporting recently in his latest mock draft, which by the way had the Wizards getting Fears at six, Queen at 18, and Jameer Watkins out of FSU at 40. I think that'd be a phenomenal class. I don't think Queen is there at 18, let alone falls out of the lottery, but you never know. His reporting was basically that the Wizards are deciding between Trey Johnson, Jeremiah Fears, and Yegor Demin at number six. I think from other reporting as well as Kevin's that it's kind of option A, Trey Johnson. And if he goes to Utah at five, like some expect, it's kind of option one B is Fears and option two B is Demin. I guess they'll kind of decide that based on who has the better pre-draft workouts, individual workouts with the Wizards, the better meetings in the pre-draft process with the Wizards, kind of whatever their intel they have, they'll decide between those two. I think it's six. But again, I think Johnson's probably preferable. KOC says it's really down to those three. So that takes out Malawak, Derek Queen, Knipple in that range, right? It's kind of down to those three guys. At least one of them, if consensus goes the way it should in the top four, will be there. At least two of them, sorry, of the three will be there at six. It's just a matter of, you know, what Washington wants to do in that range. They're clearly star hunting, I guess. Maybe that's not the best term, but that's what most people are using, right? I think it's the thing that KOC used as well, star hunting, because they want that lead guard or they want that difference maker that can certainly help them. I mean, like I mentioned multiple times on the pod, they ranked 30th in offensive rating and efficiency last year, 27th in points per game last year. Like they need scoring. They need help on offense. You know, you can only draft so many defenders to where, you know, you are a solid defensive team like Orlando, but you lack offensive creation. And you're kind of in these grinded out, murky games. And you need offensive creation in a league that scores a lot of points now. You can't just stop everyone in every possession. So I think going offense makes sense here. I think the guys that were mentioned in Demin, Johnson, and Fears, none of them are necessarily known for their defense. But they're known as possible, definitely guys that can score. Or in Demin's case, could be able to score. Has shown ability to. And can play mank for others, be offensive creators. So that's the reporting from KOC. I haven't seen reporting indicating that he'd be wrong. I think that's kind of what Wizards fans assumed. To me, it still seems like it's between Johnson and Fears for six. Again, I could get behind a Derek Queen. I like the fit there. Not necessarily too high on Malawak with the fit there at six. I think there'll be better prospects. Same with Knipple as well, but I guess we'll see. One last look. This is my top 25 big board again. Now that we're on YouTube, the comment section is open, which is a good and bad thing because I can hear people, you know, hyping me up and saying, you know, I actually think this is a pretty good board. But I'm sure a lot of you guys think it sucks or a lot of you guys aren't necessarily agreeing with me, and that's perfectly fine. If you are one of those people, please feel free to let me know in the comments. I'm always open to dialogue. This board has shifted so much, even though in the last 24 hours of just new intel, reading different people's takes on players and watching different games from my perspective. So it's definitely going to be changing. This will be a lot different, I believe, a little bit different at least come June 25th, 26th in the NBA draft. But again, if you like it, if you don't like it, the comment section is open. Feel free to express your opinion. But that's going to do it for this episode. Hopefully we'll have some more draft experts coming on because I, right hand up, I'm not a guy that's going to come out here and say I'm a draft expert or this really great draft analyst that is going to come in here and you know, you need to, whatever I say is right. Like this is, I'm a guy that watched a lot of college basketball, have gone more into the international players over the last couple of weeks with some film, And I've studied up on some draft reports too, but by no means do I consider myself a draft expert. I am not. I'm just someone that's interested in it and likes doing some evaluations and stuff. So again, I think that's noteworthy for you guys in the comments and you guys listening to kind of take that into consideration. But again, one final look, this is my draft board. Again, feel free to hit me up in the comments, but that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. Subscribe to the pod. I'm glad that I'm on YouTube now because it allows me more to interact with you guys. But we've got a lot of subscribers. We got a lot of traction on the channel. Feel free to hit the subscription button if you guys like what you see. If you like the episode with Damo, which most people did, if you like episodes of just me kind of going on about the Wiz and stuff, I'll be here at least once, maybe twice a week throughout the summer. So if you want to get alerted, if you want to be a part of the channel, feel free to subscribe. Again, thanks for listening, guys. That's going to do it. Go Wiz.